Hello.
Hello, Plunder Bunny.
Why can't I see you? Why can't you see me? Ah!
There you are.
Am I?
I see you. Oh, there you are.
It stopped flicking.
Can you see
it's
me?
Okay.
I can't see me.
I can't see you. I don't want to see
you. I believe you do.
No.
Dude, why can't you see me?
Ah! It must be that you are a creature of the night.
You are likely to be eaten.
You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torch of a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torch of a match in your inventory.
Hello.
Hello.
You're looking good. You're looking good for a person who has Skype issues.
Well, that's just for a person who has Skype is all you need to say there. I don't think you need to say issues. I logged in as Skype. First, it made me reinstall the whole software. Mm-hmm. And then I logged in as me, maybe set up a new password. And it said, you don't have a profile. You don't have any contacts. You don't have a profile picture. I know nothing about you. What's your birthday? I'm like, I feel like you don't know me anymore. And then I quit Skype and relaunched and goes, yeah, I know you. Oh, well, Skype and I have issues. It's also telling me that there's a beta thing active at the moment. So, you know, this will be exciting. This will be an exciting show.
Excellent.
Excellent. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very good. I'm excited to talk about this game. And this is one of the rare times where I finished the game before you. Normally.
And I played the game in the past. I finished the game 20 years before you.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
But in this latest iteration, even though I had already played it, you beat me.
Well, we will find out why. We will find out why.
Why?
First, you want to look at the mail?
I got mail. I took notes.
Oh, wow.
I didn't take a lot of notes, but I took some notes, and those notes included some mail, I'm pretty sure. I'm scrolling. This is me scrolling. We got an email from Chuck. I like that name, so I'm going to read Chuck's email first.
Chuck.
Hi. I just started listening to your podcast, and I love it. Good man, Chuck. I am maybe older than either of you. My first text adventure was, well, Adventure, which I remember playing during days when I had to be at my dad's work and he wanted to keep me quiet and he'd pacify me by putting me in front of a Wang terminal and starting either it or a text graphic Star Trek game. We later got one of the Zork series for our Apple II Plus at home and Douglas Adams's Hitchhiker's Guide. I remember enjoying both very much, but I don't remember if I finished either of them. I started playing interactive fiction again a few years ago, and when I was talking to a colleague about Adventure and reminiscing about how much fun it was, and he told me that there were a lot of IF games that various people had written for free in the 1990s and beyond, and mentioned Graham Nelson's Curses being one of the best. I started to play it, and I got hooked, and took more than 2 years to finish it. I managed to do it using only the hint system in the game itself. If I ever win the Nobel Prize in physics, I'm a physicist, I doubt I will be half as proud as having finished Curses successfully. I'm emailing because on your last show, someone wrote in to say that you should play Curses among some other new IF games for the podcast. I would be very interested to hear your opinions of it, but it might not be the right game to do for your podcast. For one thing, it is huge, more than 200 rooms, I think. And for another, it is cruel. The puzzles are mostly fair, but really hard, at least for me. But it's also extremely well written, highly literate, and dryly humorous. If I had to guess, I think that Carrington would have a 50-50 chance of liking it, but Kay would hate it.
Wow, way to sell that game to me, Chuck.
Hey,
thanks.
You just did sell the game to me, Chuck. he says, anyway, keep up the good work. I've been inspired to try to play some of the Infocom games by your show, and at least as soon as I have another free year or two to devote to them. Good.
Great.
Email.
So we're going to play Curses, and then there'll be a 2-year gap in the podcast. And people are going to be like, oh, I guess they stopped doing that podcast. No, we're just working every day on Curses.
Exactly. Curses this game. There's been a couple of games where we spent a long time finishing them. So,
yes, indeed. Let's see. We got an email from our friend Karen Hales,
who we have previously established is smarter than either of us.
Yes.
Low bar, Karen, though. You know, yeah. Don't maybe, just say it. Not a big achievement.
Maybe smarter than both of us combined. Who can say? We have a whole new game picking spreadsheet thanks to Karen's advice, and which we'll talk about later. But she says, "Hey, hi Kay and Carrington, just a quick follow-up after hearing the latest episode. While Secret of Monkey Island was indeed a bit of a surprise pick, I'm totally glad you're selecting whatever you feel like. I'm guessing most listeners can appreciate a good point and click with well-crafted and challenging puzzles. Along those lines, here are two more suggestions to consider for your spreadsheet in case you feel like including more point and clicks later. In my original 2018 email, I also had
2018.
Mentioned
2018. My goodness.
I mentioned a company called Glitch Games to sample their offerings. I had recommended the first of the Forever Lost trilogy, or a shorter free game, Cabin Escape: Alice's Story, which is a prologue to Forever Lost. And The Silent Age is a multi-episodic game in which the time travel element makes for some interesting puzzle solving. It's slow at first, but worth it once you get further. And she asks, also, did you ever encounter Steve Moretzky's The Space Bar in the 1990s? It was clunky with a lot of disc switching, but quite funny. I never finished it. I don't think I've ever heard of it.
I don't think I've ever heard of it either.
So I've added the two games that she recommended, Forever Lost and The Silent Age, to our spreadsheet, which we'll talk about later. There's a whole category called Karen Recommends.
Right.
So thank you for the letter, Karen, and for the cool recommendations.
What else did I got? I'm sure I got more. I got more. Got stacks and stacks. Here's one from Neil. Neil writes, I think it was written in before. Hello again, Neil. Hi, KNC. I'm happy to see the podcast back after completing the Infocom games. Great achievement. I'm very much enjoyed playing along with some of the games, although it was only a few due to life stuff. Of the games I played, Infidel was my favorite and Zork 1 for nostalgia value. And my least favorite was Cutthroats, which I couldn't bring myself to finish.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Cutthroats. Infidel's an odd choice for favorite, though. That's interesting.
Yeah, I'll allow it, but...
You know, will you?
Surprising.
Are you in control of these things? Well, Neil, you are allowed to have that opinion. Well, it's because like of the ending and stuff. I mean, go back to the Infidel episode, yeah. I guess. That's a neat choice for favorite. Anyway, he goes on to say, I'm also happy that you are playing The Secret of Monkey Island. For me, point-and-click adventure games on the Amiga was the natural progression to text adventures. A lot of them have the humor that Infocom games have as well. During my Easter holiday, I played through the classic Beneath a Steel Sky, which is currently free on Steam, which encapsulates the same kind of puzzles and humor, which made me love text adventures. All the best. I have not played Beneath a Steel Sky, but I think I have it in a few formats. I think it's one of those ones where I've got it on Steam, I've got it on GOG. I think I even have a disc flying around. I don't know.
Just keep buying the thing over and over again until you play it.
Until I eventually play it.
And finally, an email from Aaron Reed. Hi, Kane Carrington. Thanks for the great Eaten by a Groove episodes over the years. I haven't been on the regular podcast train since no longer having a commute, but the ones I've heard have always been a pleasure.
The other ones were even better. You should go back.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. They're better when you're driving around, I think. You need to get a job.
They should just take the time to like walk out the door, leave your family abruptly, mention nothing, and just drive around the block listening to us. Mm-hmm. That is the key to happiness.
Yeah, it's good. I agree. It's so nice.
You'll allow it.
It's so nice to revisit these games from a modern perspective and through well-versed eyes. We're well-versed, Carrington.
We have a modern perspective.
I think you both know about my 50 years of text games project. I love.
Huge fan. Yes. Huge, huge fan. Oh my gosh, so good.
Yeah. Yes. And he finished the project after running it for a year. I'm not reading his email around. I'm just talking about him now. He ran the project for a year and then he was done with it. And then he announced he was going to do a book. And then like, just like yesterday or the day before, there was like a bonus email from him with like a whole thing about like early business simulation text games. And it was like, oh, it's back.
It's like a little gift. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. So yeah, good.
Absolutely.
Can't recommend it enough. Oh my gosh. So good. So good.
So good. He said, if any of the, it's a bubble. I lost my place.
We're so excited because we're fanboy.
Oh yeah, we are. Yeah. Yeah. And he wants us. He mentioned 1992 Silver Wolf and 1993 Curses and 1996 So Far and 1998 Photopia, and said he is welcome to. He's inviting himself to talk about any of those if we want him to on the show. He basically wants us to show for his upcoming book, which I am happy to do.
Yep.
Because.
Yep.
So good. He sent a link to it. And the book will be all the stuff in his year worth of Substack newsletters plus extra bonus good stuff.
Yeah.
So
I, in all honesty, am happy to show for that.
Like, yes.
Very, very excited. Love the project. Absolutely love the project. So we'll have links to all of this stuff in the show notes. Yeah, just can't recommend it enough.
So I'm just putting in a link here. It's, for now, it says Aaron's book, but Carrington will know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about.
Aaron's book. Awesome. Oh, such a good project.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about bits and bobs I stole from that for RCR. Like, just Aaron has given me lots of things for many podcasts, so I feel like I owe some, kind of give back a bit.
Sell some of his books.
Yeah, I'm going to show.
A great project. And I love the idea. Just this totally, I'm sorry, I hit the microphone. I'm so excited. I just love the idea of, like, ahead of time, he's like, I'm going to do this project, I'm going to do it for a year, and that's it. It's not like something that's going to drag on forever, or like something eventually he's going to get bored with, and like, you know, it's going to peter out. It's just like, he set himself a goal, he was going to do something for every week for a year, and then he was done. And then at the end, he had a book, and then, so now he can package into a book. So yep. I just love that kind of style of project where you set a goal, you set a timeline, and then that's it.
I think often they're more likely to complete as well. Instead of just because when you're 9 months in and you get like, you know what, I only got a few months left, and you've got that deadline to help you get through it. So
yeah, love it.
Yep,
love it.
That's why we're announcing we're only going to do 6 more months of the show. Don't care.
That's right.
Way to go, Aaron. You've ruined everything.
Thanks, Aaron. I don't have any other feedback or anything.
Yeah, that's enough.
Okay.
That's good. That's good enough. Yeah, I know I got a bunch of things on Twitter, but I forgot to put them in the notes. So too bad, Twitters.
Yeah, sorry, Twitter. I think I'm going to be leaving Twitter eventually.
I suspect when the old orange guy comes back, who I think is inevitable, I'm going to dump and go to Counter Social or whatever.
So. Yeah, yeah. I'm checking at Counter Social. Some of my people are just like, no, you need to be on Mastodon.
I'm on Mastodon as well, but I find it very confusing.
Yeah, I checked it out once and it seemed confusing to me.
Why is everything got to be so hard?
I don't know. But I like Counter Social, but it's not linked to the other federated whatever Mastodon things. I guess it is a Mastodon, but it's its own little island.
Right.
I'm not married to it, but I love my Twitter community. I really do. And I've been there for on that site for 15 years, and I have all these friends, and I've learned things, but I just can't stomach being there if the new owner is going to let Orange Guy on, and I just...
Yeah, I'm feeling the exact same, so, and I'm worried, like, wherever I go is not going to be the same or whatever.
Yeah.
Don't want to be hanging out on Facebook. Can we bring AOL back or something? I don't know.
Right, yeah. Instant message friends, that's what I need.
Gopher. Gopher is the future. Let's all just go back to Gopher.
Did I ever tell you, I was an early internet person.
Me too.
And I was using Gopher before the web.
Me too.
And I liked Gopher, and I understood it. And it was, you know, you could find information, this menu-based interface, and you could always start in the same place. So you'd always start at the University of Minnesota, like, kind of main menu. And when the web came out, I looked at it.
You said, that's a fad.
And I tried it, and I was just like, it's not going to stick. It's confusing in that you... There's
way
no starting.
It.
There's no like starting place. It's just like you can go anywhere and just like, you know. I guess the menu structure of Gopher and the ability to like have a like basically a homepage, you know, now where it was and that kind of got you. It just made sense to me, and the web didn't. And at that time, there were so many competing web services. I mean, there was Waze and there was Veronica and there was all these, you know.
Oh, I haven't thought of Veronica and Archie and that forever.
Yeah, all these different tools. So the web, the World Wide Web, was just another thing which easily could have fallen to the wayside in my mind, you know.
Yep. And I spent so much time at the time on like news groups and other things.
Yeah.
I was like, it was fine, but whatever.
Yeah.
At the moment, the SSID of my Wi-Fi here at home is the web is a fad. Like that's literally what my Wi-Fi is. So, like, so if you live in and around near me and you see that pop up, if you're in the same building,
nice.
I'm that guy. Yeah.
So we played Secret of Monkey Island.
There was pointing and there was clicking.
There was pointing and shooting.
Yep.
And it was released in 1990 by Lucasfilm Games. It was the first game in the Monkey Island series. And it was the fifth game to use something called the SCUMM scripting language. SCUMM, S-C-U-M-M.
Mm-hmm. Which gives you an idea of the kind of, like, it's clearly, these are people trying to make humor things, because you're not going to name it SCUMM otherwise.
Right, sure. And SCUMM, I learned, stands for Script Creation Utility for Maniac Mansion. Maniac Mansion being the first thing they created with the SCUMM language. And it was kind of a authoring environment / language / system for making these point and click games.
So in a sense, it's philosophically at least the same sort of thing that Infocom did. So we're going to make a thing that makes the things, because then it's easier to make more things.
Right.
I feel like I'm quoting Gallivant. I don't know if you've ever seen Gallivant, but like one of the all-time greatest.
I've seen it. Oh. I've seen one or two. It didn't do it for me, so I...
You're wrong. It's great. But later episode, they talk about like when you hit a thing with another thing and make another thing. And you know, that's what they do with Scum. How do you not like Gallivant? You love musicals. You go to musicals all the time.
I know. I should. Ken recommended it to me a long time ago.
I won't allow it.
Okay. All right. Won't allow it.
I don't allow you to not like it. You should have my taste exactly.
Okay.
Okay. You fix that, you.
I'll work on myself.
Okay. So Maniac Mansion, and then Scum, and then Loom, and all the Monkey Island games, and Sam and Max, and Full Throttle, which I love, and The Dig, which I love.
I've never played this.
Indiana Jones ones,
So
pointy clicky.
And I like the analog that you brought up in that
I'm very smart that way
between Scum and Infocom's Z Machine, because like Infocom Z Machine, which allowed games to work on many different platforms, the Scum games could also work on across many different platforms, which was important at the time, because there were still Amigas and Atari STs and IBM PCs and Macintoshes. And
well, it was important to me as a Mac user at the time, and the very few games we would get.
Mm.
So I really appreciated it when publishers would say, yeah, fine, throw the Mac people a bone. We'll put out a game that they can play, 2 years after it comes out for PCs.
Right. So yeah, it was a multi-platform game, and we'll talk about that more later. So we played the game.
And so this is like a departure. I get like what our listener was saying, how this is a spiritual successor to Text Adventures. Yes. And in a sense it is, because these are all adventure games. It's under the adventure game umbrella. But like, one of the big fundamental differences, of course, is no hunting the verb.
There's 10 verbs, and they're on the bottom.
You click on the verb, and you click on the thing. It's like click take, and then click the picture that you're seeing of the glass, and now your character takes the glass if they can. So there's no verb guessing. So
take, and there's not even a drop, actually, which was interesting. Once you have something, you have it. There's take and use and open.
Oh, inventory.
And close.
Talk about having a lot of inventory. We talked about a game recently that you have an absurd amount of inventory. This thing was just like, you're just getting everything.
Yeah.
There's even a joke at one point in the game. It's like, great, more inventory.
Right. So, yeah, but it's an adventure game where, exactly like Zork or whatever, where you've got huge areas to explore, and you're walking around and you're meeting NPCs and you're picking up objects and you're figuring out puzzles and whatever, except there's sound and graphics.
Except there's sound and the graphics.
It turns out the best graphics aren't actually in your mind.
Aren't they? I don't know. I like the graphics in my mind. So another thing that struck me, and these are all things that I don't think would have occurred to me. They certainly didn't occur to me the first time I played the game years and years ago. But playing a point-and-click adventure now, after having played so many text adventures, your little character, your little pirate fellow, and we should go back and talk about what the game's about and stuff like that, but your pirate character will walk into a room. And now you get to just see the room. So you're like, say it's the bar. There's a bar in this game. You walk in, there's a bunch of pirates. There's a pirate on the ceiling rotating around on a ceiling fan. There's a bunch of tables. There's another room you can walk to. There's people sitting at the various tables. There's stuff on the tables. And so you kind of take all that in. And in a text adventure, it all has to get described, and often has to get described very sparsely, because there was only so much room, and especially the vintage text adventures. Yes. So just say, like, you're in a bar, it's a crowded bar, and you hear music playing, and there's one pirate in the ceiling. But here you can have a whole bunch of pirates, and you hover your mouse over various characters and things and objects, and the little crosshair changes to say, this is something you could interact with or not. So they can have a whole bunch of things. And in a text adventure, when it says there's three empty tables, and you say, okay, sit at the table, or say, I don't know what a table is, or you can't do that, or whatever. Right. It's more annoying, because it's like, well, you don't tell me you don't know what a table is, you just described it. But here, if I hover over the picture of a table and it says, like, basically, I can't interact with that because the cursor doesn't change. Mm-hmm. It doesn't at all feel like it's a bug in the game or a problem, because I just realized, okay, that was just scenery. That's fine. Yes. So I thought that was an advantage to the point and click stuff, that you don't have the frustration of your scenery and you can't interact with it. That's okay in a point and click adventure. That seemed to be a big difference.
Yes. And the corollary to that, I think, was there was a couple of places in the game where there's something on the screen that is hard to see and you can interact with it, but...
Oh my gosh.
And you need to interact with it, but it's invisible, or you really have to know to look for it, or you really just have to like put your nose against the screen to look for it. And I found that very frustrating. I'm gonna not spoil anything, but there's a door sort of thing that you need to use.
That I played the game before and I forgot about, and I got stuck in a place, we'll talk about the spoiler things, late in the game, where I'm like, I thought there was more to this.
There's a button sort of thing. I spent so much time in that room looking for that. Just door
moving
thing.
My mouse around on this island where I'm going, like, okay, slowly wave my mouse back and forth to see what happens.
Yeah, I'm like sitting there just like passing the mouse cursor back and forth across the screen, looking for the thing to show up. There's a button you need to press at one point that you need to kind of know about. And so, yes, I mean, in a text adventure, all that stuff would be described, and it would say, there's a button on the thing, or something, or, you know. It wasn't a big frustration for me, but it was just a different sort of
But I kept thinking about these things in terms of their difference from text adventures. Another one was like so much walking. In a text adventure, I can just say like, go west and you're there. And this is like, click. And now I wait as my little character walks across the screen, and then another screen, and then another screen. And they're like, oh my gosh, just go to the clock tower already. Like, holy moly, much slow walking.
I remember
walking.
That being frustrating when we played the one other graphical adventure game that we had played. I'm sorry, I should have, what was it called? The more modern one that we played a long time ago.
That one, yes. I was going to say Fublitsky, but that's the board game. We played the other one that was...
Thimbleweed Park.
Thimbleweed Park is what it's called, of course.
And just like the waiting for it to... Now, I cheated. We'll talk about how we played later, but we'll talk about how we cheated later. I used ScumVM, which is a modern interpreter.
That's right.
And so sometimes when I was going on a long walk, I hit command, or I think it was option G, which is the fast mode, and I just like was running across the screen. And schlepping from place to place.
Yeah.
And in Thimbleweed Park, at one point you could get a map. You could
fast travel. And then modern games allow fast travel.
Yeah, you could just click on a thing and you could go there. Which actually I never realized until. I didn't actually use that because I didn't know about it, but now I know about it and I appreciate it. But this didn't have that. So you just want to get from one place to another, and you just got to like watch the little guy walk.
Late in the game, there's a point where you have an overview map of an island. I don't want to be spoiling, and you you can get like a little rowboat and you're moving around and you can go to places. And so if you just click to move, you watch your character. It's really cute, the little rows, but you watch your character, the little tiny sprite, slowly rowing. But if you click to a destination, then sort of anticipating fast travel, it goes, okay, you want to just go there, like go to that beach. Great. I'll just make the rowboat go really quickly there. I'm like, yeah, but you're still making me watch the rowboat go around the whole screen. Why don't you just jump to the beach? And, oh, my goodness.
There was one part in the game, like getting near the end of the game, where like you did the thing and now you've got to take the object through the rowboat and row, and then take and walk from the rowboat to the right beach. And it actually just like did a cutscene and said,
it automatically said, okay, you go there after a bunch of time.
I'm like, it said after a short row and a long walk, you go back, and it knew what you wanted to do, and it's like that I appreciated, but it was rare.
It came late in the game though. So anyway, we should also back up and talk about what this game is.
Tell me about Pirates Plunder Bunny.
So this is Secret of Monkey Island, which is a like you have just said, a pirate game. So you play a character who wants to be a pirate, and your name is Guybrush Threepwood. Yes. And it's a silly name, and it gets made fun of in the game itself, which is great. And you want to be a pirate. Like, that's kind of the goal of this game, is become a great pilot. So pirate. So you have to learn how to do sword fighting, which involves insulting more than sword fighting. And you have to like get a crew and sail to a place. And at the same time, you're trying to win your love's heart and save them after you know, hey, they've been kidnapped. And I'm like, oh, I'm not great with that plot point, but whatever. This is a pirate game, and there's pirate fun and grog, and like that's like our theme essentially. And it plays out in a few chapters. There's like chapter one, chapter two, chapter three. I think there's three chapters. They're not all the same length. The first one is really long.
I think there's three chapters, and then there's like the final part or something.
Oh yeah, there's the little final part, which is also really quick. So we'll talk about that as well. Like Text Adventures, it's a game with a whole bunch of locations and a whole bunch of stuff and a whole bunch of puzzles. And a lot of the puzzles are solved by getting the right thing, getting the right stuff, and combining a couple of stuffs, or putting a stuff in a certain place, or giving a person a certain stuff and they give you another stuff. And that's how you solve these puzzles. It's that sort of thing, just like a text adventure. Mm-hmm. And it's funny.
It is funny. It is funny. It tries to be funny and often succeeds.
Yep.
Yeah.
I dug it. There's a cut scene at one point with a fight that happens entirely off screen. And I had found it funny at the time. I found it just as funny now. And all you're doing is like hearing bangs and reading the text of the person yelling, oh no, this. And it's hilarious. And it's amazing that you can have a whole fight scene that you don't get to see. Mm-hmm. It just happens while you're touching.
And objects are appearing and disappearing from your inventory. Like weird stuff. Wax lips and letter openers and I don't know.
Right. As on the other side of a wall, a whole fight scene is happening that your character's taking place in. And it's just great. There's a corpse at one point that you on an island you fight that's referred to as an unhealthy looking guy. That's hilarious. There's a point where you're telling a bunch of cannibals, like, look behind you, it's a three-headed monkey. And then later, like, a three-headed monkey shows up and just kind of hangs out. You're like, you couldn't have come earlier. Very funny. And there was that time we mentioned before, you pick up a bunch of tools at one point, so it's like, oh, good, more inventory. It's just like, so it got real funny stuff. Lots of things that made me chuckle.
Yeah, it's cute. It doesn't take itself too seriously.
Nope.
And I liked it. And most of the time, I thought it was... most of the time, not all the time, it was really clear, like abundantly clear about what you're supposed to do.
Not always.
But I mean, text adventures, I mean, sometimes you're just like, I don't know. But
mostly
I mean,
this was,
would,
I had a thing.
But the characters
I
would literally say, okay, go get that object, bring it back to me, and then in exchange, I will give you this other object. And
like, okay.
I was just like, great, you know, super clear. But there were other times where I didn't know what to do next, and I had to
walk around,
basically go everywhere and see
what
had
changed. Which takes a long time, and that was happened to me a couple times too. Where I was like, even having played before, I'm like, what am I supposed to do next? Oh goodness, I guess I get to take a tour of this game now. It's like, it's very slow to go to all the locations you have access to.
Right, and then you kind of just walk everywhere and like see what has changed or what what, you know, yep. someone
or is, or does a character just show up? If I walk to a certain place, will somebody yeah. walk up to me and say, "Oh, yeah. hey, why don't you go get me that thing?" I'm like, "Oh, great, yeah. here you are." And in this one of 50 right. locations, I could go to very slowly.
Right. And there were a couple of leaps of logic in there that I never would have gotten, and I had to cheat to get.
Oh, okay. I didn't, but again, having played it before, that essentially was my cheat.
Let's go back. When did you play it? How did you play it back in the day? What machine were you on? How old were you? Tell me everything.
I played it back in the day when it was new, mm-hmm. and I would have played it on Mac, like classic Mac. Which Mac? I don't know. So 1990, whatever Mac I had in 1990, I don't know what that would have been. So okay. I don't remember, but I played it at the time. And this time I played it on the one vintage computer I have, which is an iMac G4, which is a newer computer than I would have played at the time because the G4 I have is from 2000, fancy future year of 2000. And I played it on that. I went on eBay and got super, super cheap the floppy disks. But didn't get a whole package, unfortunately. I just got the disks, which I could have just downloaded.
Sure.
And I should have just downloaded, but I got the floppies. It came on three floppy disks.
A whole game's about being a pirate.
Now, here's the thing. What you didn't leap on that I thought you would is, you know what the iMac G4 doesn't have?
No, what?
A floppy disk drive. So I go online. I'm like, perfect. Mac, vintage. I know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I'm like a professional podcaster. Uh-huh. This will be great. So get myself 350. I'm like, huh. Well, this is when that era was like, you know, we don't need those fancy things. We're all CDs now. So right. I then got a floppy disk because it's a 3.5-inch, one of those uh-huh. newfangled. I consider newfangled disks a 3.5-inch floppy. Right. So I got a USB floppy disk drive, uh-huh. borrowed one, so that I could actually get these
things. One of those $20 ones off Amazon. And,
yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So luckily it has a USB port. So, yeah. But yeah, I get the disk and I sat down. I was like, oh, I have made a terrible mistake. Which is just I know it doesn't have a floppy. I don't know. Wow. I slow.
So how
see Karen Hayes? Hales, that's why it's not that exciting to be smarter than me. No big achievement, Karen Hales.
So when you were younger, how long do you think it took? Did you finish it when you were
Yes,
younger?
I would have finished it at the
and
time.
How long did it take you? A week, a month, a year?
See, you're talking to somebody who I don't know. Like I have what did I do on Wednesday? Like I have the worst memory of stuff. Most like even the things I remember from my childhood, I mostly remember the story of the thing. Like it mm-hmm. happens and mm-hmm. I tell people about it. And then later I just remember the telling people about it. And I mix things up. I have the worst memory, like just the worst memory. So I'll know general things like, I used computers. I played Dungeons and Dragons. I was at this school. Like, just, I don't know how other people will say, oh, yeah, I remember it was a Tuesday and I did this. I'm like, what? My memory is so sparse. I remember talking in junior high with a teacher. I was going to say professor, but junior high would be a teacher. And her name was Mrs. Daniel or Daniels. So, hello, Mrs. Daniel or Daniels, if you still exist. And something amazing had happened to me. I don't know. Maybe I got kissed. Maybe I got a game. Maybe I played hockey. Something happened that was great. Mm-hmm. And she was a drama teacher. And I don't think I took drama. So I don't remember taking drama, but she was definitely a drama teacher. So yeah. Maybe I took drama and I've forgotten. Or maybe I was just talking to this teacher who wasn't my teacher, which seems weird. But Mrs. Daniel, my only part of the memory is I just told Daniels this thing that had happened. I was explaining it to a drama teacher for some mm-hmm. reason. Mm-hmm. And my memory is of her telling me that she didn't remember if that thing, kind of thing had happened to her. And me being outraged, how can somebody forget something as momentous as this? How can you live and not know whether this ever happened to you? I don't know what the thing is. So I'm now Mrs. Daniel. So like, I don't know what the thing is either. But I remember all I have this memory of being outraged that an adult could forget something as amazing as whatever this thing was that happened to me. So that's basically what my memory is like. I don't remember.
Well, I know that in middle school, I didn't play hockey. I know for sure I was never kissed. So I don't think anything. What's that?
You non-Canadian.
Yeah, yeah.
I might have been kissed while playing hockey.
Oh, cool. kissed by the puck in your face.
Frequently.
Okay, so
explain so much.
So how long did it take you to do this time? Because it took you longer than me.
It did take me longer.
Because I was really into it, and I just like Fancy spent man. Like days just doing like playing that.
I didn't cheat though. When I would get stuck and feel frustrated, because how can I be stuck in a game I already played? Why can't I remember? Why don't I just remember these puzzles? I would just pause and say, I'm going to come back to it. I don't want to cheat. I'm enjoying this. And so I did it over like 3 or 4 sessions. And so then there was gaps of like a week between the sessions. So that's why it took me a while. The actual play time wouldn't have been like 100 hours or something like that. It just, I would suddenly get stuck or think, oh, how did I do that again? And I just pause. So I played it in a bunch of small chunks.
Did you remember any of the puzzles?
Yeah, I remembered almost all of them. I remembered, in fact, I can't talk about them. I guess the spoiler fans talk, but I had remembered ahead of time. Although I've clearly played more than one of these games. I remembered a whole spitting contest, which is, I guess, not a spoiler. Not in this game, so it can't be a spoiler if it's not in the game. Or I missed it. So clearly in a later game, there's a spitting contest, and I was conflating the two. But I did remember the sword fighting with insults. I did remember the nature of the key that you get to open the big monkey head. I had remembered that. I remembered like a bunch of little things. And when a puzzle would come up, I would remember, oh, yeah, I've got to give this to this person. Right? Like the puzzles in this are not that difficult. But I would remember, oh, I've got to go do this or have this achievement, and that'll let me do this other thing or whatever. So I didn't find the game very difficult.
You did
not. Even if it took me a while, I did not find it difficult. What about you? How much cheating did you have to do?
I did some cheating. Monkey boy. I played on ScumVM. Which is
on one of your new fancy computers.
It's on a new fancy computer. Oh, I got super fancy. I'll talk about that. So ScumVM is a modern interpreter for playing these games. And it works on your Linux or your Mac or your Windows or whatever you've got. You basically feed it these old files, and it's just
ironically
like,
when you say old file, you mean to pirate them.
So very droll. ScumVM is a program which allows you to run certain classic graphical adventure and role-playing games, provided you have their data files. And it plays more than 250 different games in total.
Wow.
LucasArts, Sierra Online, Revolution Software, Cyan, Westwood Studios.
I didn't know it was. I thought it was just for the LucasArts games. Well, what do you know? I'm now quite interested in downloading that.
So I played it on my Mac.
But you got stuck, right? At one point you told me there was like a game-breaking bug or something.
I had two times where I had game-breaking bugs, which I think were...
Find bugs in the game?
No, maybe. But I gather they were problems in the interpretation.
Okay.
So one of them, I was at Stan's Boats. This is the one really I'm
thinking
about.
Yes. Where you gotta
I'm at Stan's Boats, and I'm negotiating for a boat, and I'm just like walking away, and I'm like, no, I don't want to buy your boat. And I walk away, and then there was a scene where I walk into the next room, and he comes in there, and he starts tapping his foot. And that's it. He's just like tapping his foot, and nothing happens, and I can't leave, and there's no...
Oh. So what did you do?
I tried it.
Because that's relatively late in the game. It would be disheartening.
I was just like,
I didn't want
to restart at that point. I was just like, I might just have to.
Would you have had to restart? Did you do the thing I do to have like 100 saves or what?
I was saving, but I wasn't. First of all, ScumVM lets you do, I think, 10 saves. And
that's still a lot.
10 slots. And remind me to talk about save slots. But also, I mean, I felt like this game was not cruel, and it didn't like put you in situations where it were unwinnable. So I wasn't saving like a lot.
That's how they get you.
Yeah. Anyway, I tried it a couple more times, and I thought about restarting. I'm just like, I'm not going to restart. I might just have to watch someone's playthrough or something. And then I did it another time.
Oh,
and
that would have sucked.
I know. Somehow I negotiated differently and didn't get to the scene where he comes in and taps his foot at me, and I just negotiated better, so I didn't have anyway. So yeah, that was frustrating. There was another thing too. I don't remember, but yeah, something that was a little frustrating that I was just like, what's, you know, it was interpretation, I think, and error in ScumVM. So, yeah. Can we take a detour into sound and music for a minute?
Oh, so, I was going to say, or let's talk a detour, and we'll talk about, I guess it's sound and music. Tell me about sound and music.
So, as we said, this game was available for the Mac and PC and IBM PC, and it was an EGA version and a VGA version and the Amiga version, you know, and they were pretty much the same, but these things had systems had different graphics and different sound chips and whatever, and so I was interested in the sound of it, and the game version I played on ScumVM uses Apple's built-in software synthesizer, and frankly it sounded great.
I thought the one I played sounded great.
It sounded really real good. But it didn't have to me the sound that I remember from these games. Like, it sounded great, but it didn't have like the type of sound that I recall like my friends had. Like, I had some friends that had some money and had some nice equipment, and it didn't quite sound right. So I looked into it and like figured it out, and I bought some equipment so it could sound the way I remember it. So I would like to play you some various versions of
this.
Okay. And so if I've set this up right, I'm going to play several different versions.
Bring it.
If this is too loud or something, let me know, because this is not a setup I use very often. Okay.
No worries.
So we're going to start with your version. This is what you recorded.
Oh, that's right. You would ask me to, like, so I just basically held my phone up in front of the computer and said, here's a recording of what I'm hearing.
So here's a Secret of Monkey Island on the Mac G4. Solid, right? That's a nice little tune.
Coming from the Apple II world, I'm like, wow, that's a lot of sound.
All right, so...
although also kind of clipped off, like, you can tell that this is okay, but not, like, it's clearly limited.
Some of
the
notes, honestly, to me, sound a little out of place, like a little, you know. So
it seemed to be limited in its number of voices or whatever, like when I was listening, but I still was very happy with it.
Yeah.
It's funky and it's fine.
All right, so let's meet...
It's like now, me, it's funky and it's fine.
All right, so now I'm gonna. Here's the version that I heard when I played the game, which was I used the CD DOS version under ScumVM using Apple's software synthesizer. Okay.
What?
Quarantine looks flabbergasted. Wish you all could see this.
I have missed out.
And just wait for this. Wait for the drop.
Okay, come on.
That's great, right?
It's so much better. Oh my gosh.
So this is basically the PC version. With the music that was built into that. Run through Apple's best current software synthesizer, right? Which sounded great, and I mean, it was amazing when you're walking through the walking to the beach. You can hear the waves crashing on the, you know, on the shore, and there's birds, and you know.
I mean, I was perfectly happy with the version I had until now. So thank you for that. Thank you for that.
Sure.
All right. Way to ruin everything.
So it sounded great, and that's how I played the game. But it didn't sound "quote unquote" right, like what
it still
I
wasn't right. Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Well, that was what I played, right? So
not good enough,
right? So where is the thing I want to show you? All right, so My friends, one of my friends back in the day had a Roland MT32.
Okay.
Which was a hardware synthesizer, like a MIDI musical instrument digital interface synthesizer. It was a box. It wasn't like a keyboard synthesizer. It was like a box you could hook up to your computer or to your keyboard or whatever.
Oh, okay. I understand. Because when I think Roland, I think those MIDI keyboards.
Right. This is like a pizza box.
Right. Got it. Okay.
And you could hook it up to your computer and play games through it. And that is this kind of the sound that I remembered. So I found that someone has made a Roland MP32 synth emulator that runs on the Raspberry Pi. And this thing is like a bare metal level emulator. There's no operating system, right? It's not running over Linux or anything. It's just like it takes over the machine. There's no screen output. It's just
I am a Roland.
Right, yeah. So that's the sound I wanted to hear. So I installed the software and I bought this little little hat for my Raspberry
Pi.
Not
obsessive at all.
No. I bought the little hat for my Raspberry Pi that adds like the MIDI input and the little buttons that the Roland needs and everything. And so this is the sound that I wanted to hear, and this is how it sounded. Which isn't necessarily better than what I just played, but it's more vintage accurate for...
It is a catchy tune.
Yeah, yeah. The listener's going to be humming this like all day after listening to so many different versions of it. So anyway, that's... So yeah, I had a Raspberry Pi connected via MIDI to my Mac in order to...
So you
playing it through
hear the
pieces.
Correct version of the music.
Right. I'd already finished the game by that point, but let's see. Do you want to hear a couple more versions?
I do. I'm interested.
So
it's so funny how we were like, why talk about text adventures anymore? Let's do a deep dive into the music of point-and-click games.
Right. So yeah, that was with the Roland VM on Raspberry Pi, and then. There's another version. I started like playing all the different versions that's the different audio emulators that ScumVM could do. And so here's the AdLib emulator. Remember there used to be so many different sound cards?
I do. Oh my gosh, yes. I absolutely do.
So this was the AdLib emulator under
ScumVM. Which I remember.
VM.
Oh.
Such a different sound. I'm going to turn it down a little bit. Seems a little bit.
Initial credits. Such a different sound.
Yeah.
I mean, recognizable as the same thing. Brings out the marimba.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so that was that. So I have two more. If you're not sick of this,
I've got
the bad versions now.
Okay.
So
this is the one we're going to sing.
Right. My Roland emulator also had a thing where it could play sound fonts.
Is a sound font?
Is
it like a synesthesia thing? I can taste color.
Exactly. Basically, you could download different. I'm probably not explaining this that well, but you can different sets of instruments in a single file.
Now that you say that, a sound font, that is a good name for that.
Yeah, it's a set of instruments, and you can choose different ones. So I chose a popular one called the UHD sound font, and it's free, and it's popular with the ScumVM people because it's very small for what it gives you. And it was designed just for this. And I like it in general, but I... For this game, in for this opening song, there's something about it I don't like.
It's like it's adding stuff.
I think it's all there. It's just how it chooses to interpret it. Now the marimba has turned into a clangy.
Totally. It's just, this suffers from coming after the other ones.
Yeah, it's like the mix is wrong and the marimba's turned into this clangy thing.
It's a bit harsh. And,
yeah. So that was again with my emulator, but right. not with just a different setup. And the last one, which may be the worst,
save the worst for last.
Yeah.
Brace yourself, listener.
Is ScumVM emulating the Creative Music System?
Okay, I remember Creative stuff.
Creative Labs, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, we have the Apple Tubers. Secret of Monkey Pong. I mean, this is hardcore 8-bit.
Yeah, it really is. Maybe it's not the worst version.
It might be the worst version.
Marimba, I don't know. Yeah, but it's definitely not.
See, if this was a song on an Apple II, that kind of thing, but I think Atari 8-bit users and Commodore 64 users wouldn't be impressed by that.
Oh, no.
On an Apple II, I'd be like, hey, that's really good.
Right. Yeah, but this would be decent coming out of a C64 or Apple II.
But not out of a computer from 1990 or 91.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's such a stretch from that to the that Apple
version.
But that's why
people had these sound cards, like the difference it could make to a computer.
Yeah, I mean, back to the the modern Apple version.
Right.
So anyway, that was my digression into audio. I was having a lot of fun.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
See how much more you get, listener, when we move away from just text adventures. We're like a whole multimedia podcast now. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Very fancy. Very fancy.
Very fancy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So
that was fascinating. I was very happy with the music on the version I played. Like the floppy version on Vintage Mac was great. Had lots of music. It looks like the kind of game where the characters should speak, like there should be audio. But it was just the characters would kind of look like they're talking and there would be subtitles and
right.
You'd read that.
I know that in later versions they actually do speak. Once there was like CD-ROM versions,
sure.
By Monkey Island 3, I think, there was actual the choice to have.
Yeah, because this looks like a game where people should speak. It's funny how this game comes out in 1990 and it looks really good and it's on the Scum thing, but if you go back just a couple of years, it would be 87 or 88 is when Maniac Mansion would have come out and that was on the Apple II. So the Apple II, like the Scum thing, would have started on that, but then got dropped. You know, by the end of the 80s, they're like, "You're gone. We're going all Mac and PC now."
Right. The other thing I wanted to say about Scum, you were talking about save slots.
Yeah, let's talk about Scum.
Scum of the Earth, pirates. So the Scum VM, basically, if there's 10 save slots, and if you want to save, you hit Option plus 0 to 9. You hold the option key and it's 0 to 9. It's just like instant save. It's just like done. I don't know how saving worked in your version, but you know, if you want to save, hit option 9 front and you just save in slot 9. And to load, you hit control and 0 through 9.
Oh, easy to make a mistake there.
I didn't, but I was so worried.
Right?
Every time I'm just like, okay, I
don't. Every time
like,
we go to load, I think I'm going to wipe out a save. Right?
Yeah. I thought I'd want to wipe out some important save file or something. So it didn't happen to me, but I was so nervous about it.
Mm. Presumably the same save slots, though, those 10 save slots are per game. Like your slot 4 is just for Monkey Island. It's
not. And in fact, for that version of Monkey Island, because by the end I had a couple of versions installed.
Oh, why did you play different versions?
The version that I played was the VGA DOS version that I got from some abandonware site. You know, it was like called like My Abandonware or something like that. Right. And for some reason, when I was when I started doing the audio stuff, the MT32, it did not. It wasn't working, and I thought something was wrong with my setup, but it turned out like the version I was playing like didn't have the MIDI data or whatever. So I went to Internet Archive and I downloaded a different version, which was the VGA DOS version instead of the CD DOS version or whatever. Anyway, so I ended up with multiple versions installed, and that one had the MIDI data that I needed to play the sound. So that's all. And I understand there's probably an EGA version. I didn't see it. Anyway, so there's all these different versions. And you can have multiple versions of different ones installed in Scum if you want to, which I don't know why normal people would want to do that. But, you know.
Normal people.
Normal people.
What do they know?
Whatever. Normal people. Yeah. Where do we go from here?
There's a bunch of characters in this game, and your main antagonist is the ghost pirate LeChuck, who's a fun bad guy who I think stays as the main bad guy in the whole series. Huh. So the whole series is about you playing Guybrush and in some way being up against ghost pirate LeChuck, who's a ghost and a pirate, which makes him, you know, super spooky. And in this game, there's a bunch of other characters who kind of help you out. There's Carla, who's the swordmaster, who you have to defeat to learn sword fighting. There's Meat Hook, who has both his hands replaced by hooks. So that's like super piratey. You go all out, double hook, which is great. There's Otis, the prisoner. You had mentioned Stan, the used boat salesman. Mm-hmm. I like Stan. So I like the characters. I like the setting. I like so much of this game.
Stan won me over with one
his big
line.
Hat.
He with one line, which is so specific to people who I think grew up in, I think only in Southern California. He said, "I'd stand on my head to sell you a boat," which was a line used by Cal Worthington and his dog Spot, which was a used car salesman who had all these TV commercials. I'm sure he's on YouTube, but he had a little song. It's like, you know, if you want a brand new car, go see Cal. Something, something, something. Go see Cal. Buy a new car for your wife. She will love you all your life. Go see Cal. Go see Cal. Go see Cal. And his thing, he had the song and he had a dog Spot. And the dog was never a dog. I mean, literally, there would be an elephant or a giraffe, or they'd get something from the poor, you know, some poor animal from the local zoo, and he'd be there with his dog Spot, and he's like, "I'll stand on your head to sell you a car." Anyway, so. This game totally won me over when Stan said, "I'd stand on my head to sell you a boat."
Okay, cool. I did not get that reference at all.
I didn't think that you would, being a Canadian.
Nope. I like that you arrive on this island. It's Melee Island, which is always... got the TM behind it, which is just funny. Here on Melee Island, when people start talking, it just puts the TM, which I thought was great.
Yes.
Like, and then they go to Monkey Island, also a TM, and like just like lots of little text humor like that, and just really a fun game that, like you say, doesn't take itself seriously, and is not super hard. Like this is, I think, a lot easier than a lot of the text adventures we play, especially some of the Infocom games. So.
Right. Yeah. Because like, I mean, most of the time it tells you what to do, or, yep. You know, you have a good idea what to do, except for when it hides the things that you need to do. Mm. But I did have to cheat. There several times actually, so it wasn't like super easy, but it was fun and it made me want to keep, you know, exploring it.
Yeah.
I liked not having to map because the map was just there on the screen. You could, you know, just wander. It's through that door, you know.
Yep.
So
yep.
There was a grog vending machine, which I just laughed every time I saw it.
There was so over by like, Stan.
Looked exactly like a Coca-Cola machine, except it says grog.
Grog.
So good.
Looking through my notes, and I don't have too much else I can say without going into puzzles. I think I'm getting near spoiler time.
I want to know. You mentioned something.
Oh, I mentioned a lot of things.
Talk to me about Dial a Pirate. What was that about?
Oh, yeah. There's a code wheel like to launch the game. and it's dial a pirate. And so you get a little pirate image, and it's like a top and half hat. And so I didn't get one, so I had to look it up online. But since I was working with original discs, I had to use the dial a pirate.
I see. My version didn't have that. I don't know if Scum took it out or at some point, or maybe they stopped doing that at some point. But I didn't have. So was this just when you started the game?
Yeah, it's like this code wheel thing. So you get a picture of a pirate, and it'll say like a location, it's Antigua, and like there's the top, like there's a, it's weird to describe it. It's like a wheel, and around the outside of the wheel are the top of a bunch of faces, mm-hmm. and like a monkey and a pirate and a skull and all that. And then on the inner wheel are all the bottom halves, like they're from the mouth down, chin, and also a bunch of little holes that show numbers, like a year. And mm-hmm. so you're supposed mm-hmm. to say, okay, if you have the skull head with the weird sure. beard thing, what's the year for Nebraska? And it'll be like, 1680 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so you have to do this dial a pirate code. And it was literally just a copy protection thing I think it's just for the floppy disk version, but my version required it. I just looked it up online.
All right. I was a little worried because I didn't see any copy protection. I'm just like, is there going to be a puzzle I don't know how to solve?
It just becomes unsolvable and you don't know why.
Right. Oh, that's right. Sneaky, yeah. So sneaky I was stuff. A little worried about that, but then it didn't seem like it was happening. So right. Let's see if I have anything else to talk about pre-spoiler fence. Could we talk about the insults? Is that...
Yeah, we can talk about the insults. When you do sword fighting, it's less about sword fighting and more about knowing the right response to an insult.
Right. So I was unclear, you had to basically learn the insults. And I was unclear, even till now, if, like, is it just about learning the insults, or did you have to, like, fight all of the pirates on the island once, or, you know, because I was keeping track of which pirates I had fought and which ones, like the guy with the feather and the guy with the bandana.
Right.
Or am I supposed to learn insults. All the proper responses to the mockery? And so
yes, you're supposed to learn the responses, but you later, trying to be not spoiler, but you later, in fact, we'll probably have to talk about this as a spoiler defense, we'll be more detail. Okay. But in a sense, yes, you're supposed to fight essentially all the pirates because different pirates know different insults. Mm-hmm. So you fight different pirates, so you learn different insults, and the insults are always paired. Like you have a good insult, but there's a counter insult. So when somebody says one thing, if you say the right counter phrase, then you are successful. And if you mm-hmm. do two successes in a row, then you win the fight. And you have to fight various pirates to learn the counter phrase because somebody will say a thing to you. So they'll say, you're a terrible pirate. Like I'm going to say the actual one. So they say you're a terrible pirate and you don't know what to say because you've never had that insult before. But now you know that's a phrase you can use. So when you fight another pirate, you'll say you're a terrible pirate. And if you fight someone who knows the one, they'll respond with, oh yeah, so's your dad, whatever the response is.
And then you know to use that one, and you know, aha, that's
the counter. So that's what you're essentially doing. But you're learning this as a technique, because once you've got all those counter phrases, you're going to do now another fight and use those counter phrases against different initial insults. And you have to figure out how they're supposed to be paired. So that's kind of what's going on there. And we can talk after the fence in more detail if you want.
Sure. Okay. That's kind of what I thought was going on. Yeah. But I wasn't sure if I was missing some layer of it or,
nope.
Had a pirate.
It's not that much layer. It's a pirate game.
I found this game fun. I enjoyed it.
Yes.
It was a little frustrating sometimes, but I liked the graphics. I liked the comedy. I liked the music. And then I liked my side quest of exploring the different musics.
I liked that too.
Yeah, this was good.
And, so here's my question. You've played point-and-click adventure games before, though, right?
I mean, I played... Not really.
Okay.
Back in the day, I, fooled around with King's Quest a little bit. I think I had Police Quest, a pirate version of Police Quest on my IBM PC XT. I definitely played that. I didn't finish it or anything, but, I played it. So I dabbled, and then yes, I played Thimbleweed with you. That's right. About it.
Okay. So then would you recommend, if we have a listener who's played a bunch of text adventures but has never played a point-and-click game, would this be a good first one?
I think so, yeah.
It was essentially a first one for you, kind of.
Kind of, yeah. I think so too.
I think somebody could approach this game having never played a point and click game, and they'd be able to successfully do it. 100%. I think you're going to pick it up. It kind of holds your hand at the beginning, because the idea is you're just going to, where you click, your character moves to. And if you want them to do something else, you click on the verb, say, pick up or open or whatever. So you click the word open, and then you click a door, and the character walks over and opens the door. It's that sort of interaction. Yeah. And then you interact with people who will say, hey, bring me 50 gold and I'll give you a totem. And so you go do a thing that get gold. You walk back and you say, like, give. You click on the gold in your inventory, click on the person, it hands all the gold, they hand you the totem. Like, it's that sort of interface. I think it's much more approachable for many more people than a text adventure would be.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And I think if you can do text adventures, you can absolutely knock this game.
Yes. And if you're scared of text adventures, then this is also might be a good place to start.
Yeah, definitely. Yep. I think it's a fun adventure. I think it's funny. I really liked it. Highly recommended. And I think it'd absolutely be somebody's first, like, not even just first scum game, like first text adventure or first point and click adventure, period. Mm-hmm. Totally, absolutely would work. I mean, it's a big game. So the only thing that might be better is if there was like a short mini game for point and click, might be a better first game, I guess. Right. But if you're interested in adventure games, like, whatever. I think this would be fun. Dive in, do it. Totally good. Mm-hmm. And I also think, other than like the scum interpreter problems you had, mm-hmm. I think you cannot get in a no-win situation in this game. As far as I can tell, mm-hmm. I don't know what you would do to ever get in a no-win situation. So it's also like a safe game to just dive in and play. It's going to play fair, and you won't have a Walking Dead thing and be really disappointed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what I say.
Yeah. I like the characters. I liked it. It was good.
Yeah. Yeah. Highly recommended. Yeah. Thumbs up. Shall we dive?
Strong agree.
100p, fam. We got to pick another game.
Pick a next game.
Do you have opinions?
Has
Karen told us what we should play?
I don't. Well, Karen mentioned a lot of things. Is there something that you want to play next? Or
I would like to go back to a text adventure.
Okay.
I really enjoyed point and click stuff, and I would totally do more point and clicks. That is not me saying anything negative about point and clicks. Mm-hmm. I dig it. But I think it's time to go back to my roots.
Okay, sure. If you don't have anything in mind, I think we should talk about the spreadsheet that I made up with.
You made a spreadsheet, the Eaten by a Groog game randomizer, I believe it's called.
The Karen Hales Memorial Game Randomizer.
Sorry, Karen. I didn't hear.
So this is Karen.
Well, we've got like 100 and something games.
So, right now it's 118.
That's
so
a lot of games.
While I'm talking, I want you to go to random.org and pick a number from 1 to 118 inclusive.
Okay. Yeah. Going there right now.
So what I put on this spreadsheet, while you're doing that, I'm just going to talk. All the winners of IF Comp that we haven't played yet are there. All of the winners of the Exizzy Awards are in there.
Oh, you're a fancy man with fancy words.
All of the winners of the Exizzy Best Puzzle Awards are in there. Yeah, and I tried to put everything in there only once. So some things won multiple things. So I tried to remove. All the winners of the Interactive Fiction Top 50 of All Times 2019 edition listing that wasn't already won in the thing. That's in there too. A handful of post-Infocom Infocom releases that we never got to. And then a handful of Karen recommendations and a handful of other little things are in there. 118 games in total. So I have this list, and you're going to tell me a number, and we're going to see what comes up, and that's what we're going to play. Unless it's one of the few graphical adventures, point and click.
Unless it's Zork. If it starts with Zork, I'm re-rolling.
Okay. So what?
I reserve the right to say no.
Okay, that's fine.
I'll go back to Zorks later, but you know, I can't remember. But I think there are Zorks on this list, aren't there?
There are.
Oh God. Yeah. Just when you think you're out,
that's fine. Zork. Well, let's see how many Zorks we have. I have to spell it right. Hold on. There's four Zorks on here. We've got Return
to
Zork.
That's a high percentage of Zorks.
Return to Zork, Zork Grand Inquisitor, Zork Nemesis, and Zork the Undiscovered Underground. Those are all fall under the post-Infocom releases. So, yeah. Okay. What number do you have, sir?
I got 39.
Number 39.
Random.org, when I hit generate, gave me 39 from a minimum of one, a maximum of 118.
39 is the game Everybody Dies by Jim Monroe, which...
Jim Monroe, the author?
I don't know. I'm telling you everything I know. It was the interactive fiction top 50 of all times list. Let's look it up.
I'm hoping it's Jim Monroe, the author, who I am a fan of. I mean, obviously, it's Jim Monroe, the author of this game, but I meant Jim Monroe, the author of books such as Angry Young Spaceman.
It says Jim Monroe, writer, creator, producer.
Yep, that's the guy. Because, does the No Media Kings imprint, and I've been a fan of this guy forever.
Cool.
That's exciting.
I've never heard of him.
I think he might be Canadian.
Oh, well, that's why you know him.
No, it's just, I think
hanging
so.
Out with Jim Monroe and Alanis Morissette, and you're just...
We just hang out.
Yeah.
And it's ironic, don't you think?
Yeah, he wrote some novels, an opening act of unspeakable evil.
Yeah, okay, yep, 100%. I have...
Angry Young Spaceman, yeah.
Yeah, Angry Young Spaceman. I've got a signed copy of Opening Act of Unspeakable Evil, which when he was signing, he had... He would sign it, and he had a little vial of blood, and he would splash the page. So you get a signed page with I don't think it's real blood. I'm hoping it's not real blood. I don't know. And just splash. But the first book I read of his was late 90s, so 98, 99, just browsing a bookstore, as one does, and I come across this book called Flyboy Action Figure Comes with Gas Mask. And I'm like, I'm in. I don't need to know what that's about. I'm going to buy that book. And I bought it, and it was great. And that was I think... maybe his only or one of the very few books he published through a traditional publisher, and then decided, you know what? I'd rather do my own stuff. I've proven I can do that. I'm going on my own. And he created a book imprint called No Media Kings to really push the idea of self-publishing and make your own movies, make your own books, make your own whatever. And then you can use the No Media Kings imprint thing to kind of bundle them together. It's a self-publishing Penguin Books kind of thing. Hmm. I think I've read all his books. I've read Everyone at Silico.
You haven't played all of his games.
I didn't even know he made games. I knew he made movies and short things and stuff, but he does tons of stuff. But anyway, I'm very excited. I'm very excited. Is what I'm looking for.
I'm going to tell our listeners what little I know, which I just looked up while you're talking.
Yes.
It's a fantasy game, 2008. About the story, it starts with a metalhead, Graham, realizing that throwing that shopping cart over the bridge was not the great idea he thought it was, even if it did get him out of washroom duty at Cost Cutters.
Okay.
Okay. It won third place. Let's see, what did it win? Won third place overall, second place Miss Congeniality Awards in the 14th annual IF competition 2008. And... it's on the best of all times list. So, yeah, seems like it's a game we're going to play.
Well, that went well, huh?
Warning. The game Carrington and Kay have chosen is not available.
Not for us, anyway.
Not for us.
The best laid plans of mice and me.
Yes. So it is 2 days later after we last talked. 2 days later.
Two, count them two.
Uh-huh. And I went to download our game last night. Everybody dies, and
everybody dies, but nobody plays.
Nobody plays. It's true. What does this mean, Carrington? Quixie init QLK put J string invalid stream.
You know what that means. We can't say that kind of thing on a podcast.
Talk dirty to me, baby.
We can't play the game we picked.
Yeah,
we failed. I was all excited. It was an author I'd heard about. I mean, for the listener, it's probably been 5 seconds since we picked it, and I was all excited. And that excitement has died on the vine, because the game has an unplayable bug, and it's Windows only, and also can't be played, or a whole combination.
Right. So, yeah, basically, something to do with empty strings. There's a bug in the program, and... something is wrong either with GLK or with Quixie or with the game itself, and people have been debating it for years and no one has actually fixed the problem. The author no longer has the access to the source code to rebuild the game, and it won't work on Linux, it won't work on Mac, it won't work on the web
version. The online play thing.
Apparently you can download a Windows version that's prepackaged and ready to go, but neither of us uses Windows, so...
So I first have to download a
prepackaged and ready to go version of Windows. Right. It just seemed like a lot of work.
It seems like that's not fun.
That's not fun.
So we're going to pick another game.
Yeah. How are we going to do that?
You're going to go back to random.org and you're going to
random.org.
You're going to pick a number that's not 39.
What if I get 39 again? No, then I will download Windows.
You're picking a number between from 1 to 118, but not 39.
Okay, for 118, generate. Oh, okay, 59. What is that?
That sounds like a good number.
Does it? Okay, what did we get?
I don't know. Their Angelical Understanding by Porpentine.
I don't know this.
I've never heard of this? It is marked Surreal 2013.
Oh, that was a surreal year.
Yeah. It is in the Interactive Fiction Top 50 of All Time list, which is how we got it. It was published in 2013. It is a Twine game. We've never played a Twine game.
It suggests that we wear headphones.
Really?
And it comes with warnings that it has suicidal ideation, ableism, abuse, and a possible epilepsy trigger. What have we gotten into?
Jeez. You had to pick number 59. Okay. It won ninth place overall and second place for the Miss Congeniality Award in the 2013.
Remind me again what that is. What is it?
It's like the fan favorite.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I prefer that over other kind of things.
Yeah.
On IFDB,
yeah.
There are pages and pages, by which I mean three, pages of games. This person has pumped out a ton of games.
Yes.
My goodness. Very impressive.
Hmm. Well,
there's one called High End Customizable Sauna Experience.
I could use one of those right about now. After even considering having to install Windows, I need
to... Okay, cool. Okay. Right. So it's like won some awards. It's on a top list. It's got a cool name. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's got some weird warnings. Mm-hmm. What's the worst that can happen?
Really?
What's the worst that can happen?
We could be epilepsy triggered or suicidal ideation triggered is what could happen.
Apparently
the worst things that could happen.
So make sure you've got your headphones on tight.
Since we last talked, I received my Playdate.
With the crank.
This came today. Yes.
Are you excited?
I am excited.
Have you played any games
super
yet?
Super cute. I have. I played the surfing game for a few minutes, which I'm going to have to figure out. And there's a game called Casual Birder where you're walking around taking pictures of birds with your phone. It's super adorable. The whole thing, everything about it is super adorable. And the whole setup initiation, like, you know, getting it set up thing was just, it couldn't have been cuter. And
nice.
I'm already happy with it. So
nice. Excellent.
But as far as I know, there's no interactive fiction available on it.
Yet.
Zork with a crank.
Crank clockwise for left, crank counterclockwise for right.
Okay. So we're going to play Their Angelical Understanding by mm-hmm. Porpentine, 2013, a game neither of us have even heard of. But,
so we get to the end of the show, dear listener. Probably we mentioned again at the time we recorded what the next game will be.
Yeah.
But it's all a pack of lies.
You know
better than us now.
Yes.
You're in on the future. We're stuck in the past.
We now return you to your podcast already in progress. Spoiler fence time?
Spoiler fence time. So this is the spoiler fence. If you're new to the podcast, because I know you're Jim Monroe or whatever, and you just show up now, then what we do is talk, as we have done, about the game in general terms, trying not to spoilerize too much stuff. But now, on the rest of the podcast, we're going to drop all the guards. We're going to do all the insults. We're going to talk about specific puzzles and their specific solutions. We're going to talk about the ending of the game. Everything can be spoiled now. So if you want to play the game, you can stop listening. The podcast will always be here. And in fact, it helps us if you have to download it again in the future. It makes it look like we're twice as popular. Do us a favor and turn off and stop listening. But if you've already played the game, or you know you don't want to play the game, or you just like to know the puzzles before you play the game, now is the time to keep listening, because on the other side of Spoiler Fence, we are going to spoil all the puzzles and talk about the specifics. And that's it. And the music plays gently in the background. And then you can join us next time. If you stop listening, we'll see you next time when we do Everybody Dies by Jim Monroe. You should do this for all our episodes from now on. You should pick a song and just start playing stuff.
Excellent.
Yeah, I like it. But now we are.
I paid for the loopback software. I'm going to get my value from it.
Excellent. Okay, cool. Here we are. Let's ruin some puzzles.
Let's ruin some puzzles. Okay.
Should we start with the pirate insult thing? So I can just kind of be more detailed about that?
I feel like I thought I understood it, and I just wanted you to... Yeah, so...
Yeah.
And then at the end, I mean, so you learn all these insults.
Right. So you learn the specific pairs when you're fighting
the general pirates.
I wasn't
sure if I had to fight all the pirates. And it wasn't that really that I had to fight all the pirates in itself. It's that I needed to fight all the pirates to learn all the pirate insults.
Yes.
And then at the end...
And then you need to know to use, like, when you're given a new insult, to use that against other pirates so that you can, like, solicit the proper response and find out what that is. And
I thought
eventually you make a whole list.
Clever that, like, at the end, that, like, the big bad fight... You have to use the responses that you've learned, but they're to different things. But they totally fit.
They still work. Exactly. Yeah. So you have to look at it and say, oh, this comeback would work good for that. So you've got all your comebacks, and now you have to kind of think about how to use them.
But he's saying new things to you that you don't have responses for, but you still have great comebacks that happen to like lock in real well.
Yeah, so it's that super clever. Fun. And so that's how the sword fighting works. It's all just insult based, and nobody ever dies. You just get and say, "Wait, okay, I give up. Your insults are too good." So super fun.
Yeah, I took a screenshot of I think it was near that end where you're arguing with the ghost pirate or whatever, and the screenshot is your choices of things to say are, well, I can't believe you're a Normandy, or, well, I can't believe you're Atrocity, or, well, I can't believe you're a Clarity. just like all these big words. I don't know. It was funny.
There was one of the things I found absolutely hilarious. I almost brought it up earlier because it's not really a spoiler, but I wanted people to just enjoy it the first time. When you're on the island in the last part or the middle part of the game, you're on this island, on Monkey Island. Mm-hmm. I love the increasingly passive-aggressive notes that have been left all around the island that are between LeChuck and the monkeys and the cannibals mm-hmm. and Herman the castaway saying, you know, bring me back this. Stop doing this. Please stop the noise. And all these official memos.
You stole my banana... grabber and I'm not giving it, you know,
back, and it's an outrage and we're gonna have a meeting about this and later and it's just so funny that like they're apparently just all sending formal letters to each other and they're left around, and I delighted in that is so funny. I loved all those letters.
Yes, that was cute. But,
there's a good puzzle that I quite liked. Mm-hmm. Simple puzzle, again on Monkey Island, where Monkey Island TM, where you have to blow up a dam. So this dam,
I didn't think that was a simple puzzle. I had to look that up. I didn't know that was a leap of logic.
You have gunpowder, so you figure it's going to be a gunpowder thing.
I couldn't find the gunpowder. It was practically invisible.
It's in the cannon. What do you mean it's invisible?
It falls out of the cannon and it's a pile.
You push
the
cannon, it falls down, and a big pile of stuff falls out. And you hover your mouse over it, and it calls it gunpowder.
Okay. That's one of the things where you have to hover the mouse. I didn't notice it.
Oh, okay. I didn't notice it fall out.
Yes, I had it, and I didn't know to blow up the dam. And yeah, so I needed a lot of help through that.
Oh, okay. So I interrupted you.
So you blow up the dam.
But it also could be that I just, who knows? Maybe I was remembering because I looked up a spoiler the first time.
Maybe.
Could be. Yeah. But you blow up the dam, and I like that, like, you've got this gunpowder and you need to ignite it, but you don't have any way to make fire. Like, you're around, like, where can I get a thing burning or whatever? Mm-hmm. But instead, you've got a spyglass, and if you open up the spyglass, you can take the lens out and then use the lens with the sun. And being a point-and-click game, how do you use the lens with the sun? You click the use, click the lens, and then in the background, click on the sun. Use the lens with the sun, like, up in the sky. And I'm like, that's great. Like, you wouldn't think that's... Oh, how do you do it?
I don't. Well, that's the thing. Normally, I finish the games after you do, so they're super fresh in my mind. And this one, you took longer than me, and I didn't.
Should have left me a memo about that.
Should have left you a passive aggressive memo on the island.
Yes.
I did
so,
not.
Oh, I wonder how. I wonder what the other solution is.
Click on the sun.
Like that's how I did. I had a lens, and I don't think I was remembering. I just remember thinking,
I used
a lens.
I think I used there's some flint. There's some flint in a rock.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I did it the old-fashioned way by hitting, banging rocks together.
I used the spyglass, and you click on the sun in like the basically the map painting up in the top corner. You like use the spyglass with the sun, and it ignites the gunpowder and blows up the dam. And I was like, that's a great puzzle, but a great fun solution.
Neat.
Turns out more than one solution.
I love that.
Yes.
Apparently, there's more than one. There's two ways for the game to end.
Oh,
you can't rescue everybody.
You can either. Yeah, I don't rescue Herman, the castaway.
You can either rescue Herman or you can rescue your crew. You can't rescue both.
I didn't know that.
And the ending is a little different based on who you don't rescue.
Well, obviously, because the other ones are going to be left on the island. I end up leaving poor Herman, the castaway, on the island. How do you not rescue your crew? They come to you. Don't they?
Not if you take Herman with you at the end.
Oh, I didn't know that, because I was... You go to the pirate ship at the end, the ghost pirate ship, and I've kind of solved the problem, and I'm on that cliff overlooking it. And then your crew shows up and says, okay, we're out of suntan lotion or whatever, or something like that.
Right.
It's time to go back. And I'm like, great, let's go back.
I ended up leaving them behind, which I didn't feel bad about, because what a bunch of stupid loafers. They mutinied, and they're just like sitting on the... Yeah,
lays around and do nothing. And poor, I feel bad because I leave Herman there, who's like already been a castaway forever,
right?
Leaving all his notes around. Poor Herman, who is actually helpful to me. He helps me in the game in a way that my crew does not.
Right.
And yet I abandoned him on it. Yeah, he totally deserves. But I am a bad person, and that's why. There are some puzzles that don't make sense. Now, in all these games, in the text adventures, there's always puzzles where if you think about it, it's like that's not a thing. Like There's a point where you're on the ship, and I want to talk about how I couldn't find how to get below in the ship.
The hatch.
I was going to say, was it you too? Couldn't find the hatch. And I've played the game before. I forgot. Anyway.
Yeah, I think I had to look up a walkthrough. It was just like, click on the hatch. The hatch is hard to see. I'm just like, oh, yeah. That was it. That's all I got out of the walkthrough. It's just like,
I walked there for so long. And as a person who played the game before, it's embarrassing. But okay, we'll talk about the hatch in a second. So there's this point where you get the cereal box. I like that there's cereal. And of course, it's Captain Crunch cereal, which is great. Like, you can't tell from the little captain picture.
Right.
So you eat the cereal to find a prize in the box. Totally no problem with that. You open the little prize thing to find a key inside. Okay, sure. But that key is what you need to unlock the cabinet in the captain's quarters.
Mm-hmm.
Totally fine. But in the world of the puzzle, it makes no sense that the random prize inside a random box happens to exactly fit the captain's quarters cabinet.
Well, first of all, I needed to cheat on that too, because I didn't think to open the box, which was stupid, which was a failure on my part.
I don't think I opened the box. I say eat the cereal. Oh, I think I did. I think I say eat cereal.
Oh, I think open box. I mean, same thing. You know, open box, eat cereal. I didn't think to eat the cereal. I was dumb.
I always assumed
that somebody hid the key in the cereal box.
And you just pick that happen. It's a whole cabinet. There's a whole kitchen cupboard full of cereal boxes.
Yes.
And the one you pick happens to be the one with the...
Man, life is amazing, isn't it?
you're living a charmed life there, Kay. I thought it was like, totally works. And I accept it in these games. But it was one of the ones where I was like, that's really not where you'd find that key. Like, come on.
Yeah.
There's a maze, sort of. Because all these games love to have a maze, of course they do, where you use the key for the monkey head, which is a giant Q-tip. You get and you clean the monkey's ear, and the mouth opens up, tongue comes out. You go in the monkey, and inside the monkey are the catacombs. And to get through the catacombs, you have to use the head of a navigator, which is an actual head that the cannibals give you, and its eyes kind of like it. Oh no! It, when you look at it zoomed in, its eyes are moving, but when your character's holding it, the head rotates in your hand.
You can totally talk to him and like have conversations with this dead head.
I love the head of the navigator, which is great, and it's fun that you get the head, you know the cannibals have a head, and they tell you need that to get through the, like, again, the game tells you what you need. The cannibals say, to get through the catacombs, you're going to need a head of a navigator, and we've got one, but we're not going to give it to you because it's the only head we have. Right. So I think I've got to get them another head. And you do that fun because earlier in the game, you get a pamphlet that's how to get a head in navigating. So you're like, oh, I guess we can get our own second head. So you give them the pamphlet, and they'll give you the actual navigator's shrunken head, which is very funny.
Yes.
There's a lot of inventory items that are very funny in this game. I dug it. I dug the inventory. Lots and lots of humor.
I was confused by the book, the what's it called? The captain's logbook said that
there was a recipe instead
their,
of a
their map. Directions. What they was sold as a map was really a recipe,
right?
And so I thought for a while that meant that my map, which was was really had a hidden recipe on it.
No, it's that you have to use this recipe to get to the island.
Yes,
cook up a magic brew.
Right, which was cute. Once I figured that, which I found the real recipe, his map, which was in the that cabinet that you just mentioned.
Right.
Then you cook up this recipe, and there's this big cook pot on the
and
ship.
You got to put all the stuff in it.
You got to put all stuff, and it's like ridiculous. Like you need like a skull, but like using the pirate flag with the skull and crossbones on it, you can throw that in there and that counts as the skull and
yep.
stuff that, you know, sort of matches and it's good enough and it makes the recipe. So
that knocks everybody out and you wake up with your ship has arrived at Monkey Island TM and then your crew immediately says, yeah, we're just gonna sit on this thing and get sun and not help you. I'm like, oh.
And your guy sees Monkey Island for the first time and says like, this was totally worth the $49.95
Yes, and to get over there, you basically put yourself in a cannon and blast yourself across, which you know you can do because earlier in the game when there's that the circus.
Yeah.
You get a job being a tester for being fired out of a cannon. So it's like you can say, oh, that's how I get over there. So I like how they work together.
Cool. I cackled when I figured out how you're supposed to do it. That was great.
Yep. And just blast yourself across and now you're at the island. It's like, okay. And finding notes and bananas and getting that monkey to follow you, which is a tough one if you don't know to do that. Like you got to get 5 bananas and give them to the monkey. So the monkey will follow you because that's the only way to get into the monkey area. You need somebody to pull down on a branch and like hold it down essentially. So if you get the monkey,
the nose of the totem pole. If you didn't know it was there.
Yeah. And I think, like, I knew just exactly what to do. I remember I got to get enough bananas that the monkey will follow me and the monkey hangs on the branch. So that clearly was me remembering it from playing it before versus just immediately seeing the nose in the totem pole going, you know what I should do with that? Let's just get a monkey to swing from it. So that clearly was my version of cheating in this one. So.
Previous knowledge. Cheating.
Previous knowledge. So should we talk about the end of the game? Like what happens when you finally beat the ghost pirate LeChuck, but he's got this great punch, and so his arm winds up like
Popeye style, like
exactly. It's just winds swinging up thing, and then pows you up way into the sky. We get this overhead view as you tumble up, and he bounces you around the map. But you have been told that the way to how's it work? You got to get him to have the root beer. That's it. Turns out in this game, root beer will kill ghosts because of course it will. So you get this spray bottle of root beer. But you can't, it gets knocked out of your hand. So you have to come up with another, find another root beer that you can use to zap the ghost pirate Chuck. And in one of the areas that you land in, which is I think the ship location, right? Like Sam, the ship merchant, you land there.
There's the grog machine that I talked about. Yeah.
You get that to open up and get yourself a root beer and
until you do it. I mean, you land in some random location on the map. The ghost pirate comes up and winds up his arm. You know, takes a second, and then he hits you, and you fly back to the big scene, and you see the whole map, and then you land in some other place, and it's like zooms into there, and then like you're standing there for a little while, and then he shows up, and that just continues until and after I had solved the game, I went back to that and I put it on fast mode and I let it run for probably a couple of hours of screen of in-game time and it just kept going. It did no problem.
Well, I did a similar thing at the very end of the game. The credits roll, and we should talk about the credits. There was a famous person in the credits. So the credits roll, and at the very end of the credits, it says, "Turn off your computer and go to sleep." Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, I wonder if there's a post-credit thing or whatever. So I just left it running and went to bed. Got up in the morning to see what was happening, and it was still just blinking away, turn off the computer, go to sleep. So as far as I can tell, having let it run for many hours, there is nothing past that. I thought there might be a joke thing or something, but there's nothing, alas. Yeah. Orson Scott Card is in the, who I'm not a fan of, is in the, I like that his one book, but I don't like him as a person. I got opinions.
Yeah, Ender's Game got opinions. Is a solid classic. His opinions about gay people is not so good.
Yeah. But he's in there as credits for sword fighting insults. So I guess he was the one who provided a bunch of the insults.
So when I posted about finishing the game and his son. So I let me go back. I have interviewed Orson Scott Card for the Antic podcast.
Did not know that.
Yeah. I'll put a link in the show notes.
That's not all your interviews. That's funny. I missed that one.
Let me make a note right there. I interviewed him in 2018 for the Antic podcast because he wrote for Compute Books, Compute Magazine, Compute Books and stuff. So I talked to him about Atari stuff, and I just love. It's happened a few times. I take like someone who's super famous and then interview them about Atari things and not about like what they're famous for.
Sure, which is probably very interesting for the person though to like talk about different things.
Yeah. So I probably talked to him in passing about this game at that point, but mostly we're talking about Atari and Compute. Sure. But I then like in the next interview, like literally the next week, I interviewed his kid Jeffrey, who. Jeffrey Card helped his dad review games for Compute Magazine. It was just like literally the dad would just, you know, Orson would be like, hey, we got to review this game. And Jeffrey would, you know, play the game because he's a kid and then offer his opinions. And, you know, those might make it into dad's. So after I posted on Twitter a couple weeks ago about having finished the game, Jeffrey Card responded to me and said that he helped his dad write some of the insults.
Uncredited.
Yes.
Sword fighting insults by Jeffrey Card.
Yeah. So, Orson Scott Card. So anyway, I've interviewed him. And I also interviewed another person who is involved with the game named Erica Wilmander. He's one of the credited people in the game. He was just one of the many people who put it together. I saw that name in the credits, like, oh, yeah, I've talked to him. So
I talked to him.
Yeah.
They're like Pokemon. You're trying to collect them all.
Right, collect them all. So, yeah. I'll put those links in the show notes.
Right.
But
I'm trying to think of other puzzles. I mean, there's lots of little puzzles, but mostly they're easy. Oh, there's a person who got let out of jail. But you're told about Grog, like don't use Grog. Grog will like dissolve anything. Mm-hmm. So you realize, oh, I should bring Grog and it'll be able to dissolve the bars or the lock to get this person out of jail. But of course, if you put the Grog in like a mug, it dissolves the mug. So you have to get a bunch of mugs and put Grog in a mug and then like get there as quickly as possible. And as the mugs start to dissolve, before it completely dissolves, pour it into the next mug.
Right. And you can't, wait until it's a puddle.
Got to get it slightly before the dissolves. Right. So you got to kind of look at the icon. And when it gets to a certain amount of crunchiness, pour it into the next mug. And there's like, it's ample time. You get 5 mugs. You only like really need 3 if you rush it. But that's a neat puzzle where you got to think, okay, I'll get a whole bunch of vessels and just slowly destroy them as I go.
Right.
Oh, so I guess you could get a Walking Dead. If you poured it in and it dissolved them all, does it generate more mugs if you go back to the kitchen or are you just out?
I believe so. I believe there's always, more mugs show up.
Okay.
That happened to me, actually.
Then didn't happen to me because I'm really good at these games.
You're so the best.
That's what I keep telling people. So that was a fun puzzle. Beep, boop, baby. So it's fun. So the 3 pirates in the initial bar you go to, and they tell you like to become a pirate, you're going to have to master sword fighting, and like they kind of set you off on the quest to master these things. But then you get interrupted because who is she? She's the mayor? Yeah, the mayor gets kidnapped by the ghost pirate LeChuck, and so you go off to save the mayor, having become a great pirate.
Right.
Buy yourself a terrible ship, and it's super fun.
So you kind of complained about you've got to rescue
I hate the whole thing. Let's have a love interest too. But she does rescue. She's self-rescuing.
No, she's self-rescuing. She's
yep. My girlfriend has a T-shirt that says self-rescuing princess. So like totally on board with that. But it's a cake have eat too. Let's make a sentence out of that because she rescues herself fine. But the game we play is a game where all of what we're doing is to go and rescue her. And yes, at the last minute, she's like, you didn't need to do any of that. This was all useless.
In fact, you kind of screw up her self-rescue plan by showing up and screwing up.
Oh, that's true. Yes, you do screw up the rescue plan. Yeah. But at the same time, and so it is true that, yes, she didn't actually need your help and she rescues herself fine. But the point of view narrative of this whole game is the love interest lady gets kidnapped and you as the bumbling dude have to go save her. And I'm like, it's just, you know, yeah. There's certain things where I'm like, you can do better, man. Come up with a different idea. Come up with a different thing.
Yeah.
So I don't dig it.
Well, I do like that her first name is Elaine, so that when you go into the church to stop the wedding, you can go into the church and yell, Elaine! Elaine.
Yes, exactly.
One of the options. So
yep. It's all good. I like the characters. And again, like I don't like that trope, but I like this game. I dig this game. I overall highly, highly positive. Very glad I played it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me again. Too. It was a good choice. And next time we're going to do a Jim Monroe game. That's exciting.
I'm excited that you're excited for this person that
I'm excited that I'm excited.
Yeah. Good. Excellent. I wonder how long it is. I wonder if it's short or long. I don't know anything about it. Just we'll find out.
Who knows? Got to find out if he's actually Canadian. I'll know so much more about this author by the time we go on to the next one. I think that's all I have about Secret O Monkey Island, as they say. Do you have anything else?
No, that's all I've got.
That's it. That's all there was to say about The Secret of Monkey Island. So this has been Eaten by a Gru, the interactive fiction podcast, as they say, including the pointings and the clickings. Not just Infocom anymore, folks. If you want, you can send us feedback. Tell us how your experience was. Have you played this or not or whatever? Are you Jim Monroe? You can email us. So you can send us email at gru@monsterfeet.com or hit us up on Twitter. He is at KSavitz. I am at Carrington. We might soon both be moving to something else. Who knows? If you want to help other people find the podcast, which you should feel obligated to do, then we would appreciate it if you'd give us a nice review on iTunes. Supposedly that helps. But honestly, I don't read the things on iTunes, so whatever. The show notes and such can be found at monsterfeet.com. And thanks to MC Frontalot for letting us make a monkey out of his song and use it as our theme tune. And next time we will have played and we'll discuss Everybody Dies by Jim Monroe. Play us out, Kay.
Thank you for podcasting with me, Karen.
Thank you for podcasting with me, Kay. I'll talk to you next time.
And we sit on, often Peace and I will sit upstairs for an hour and just watch the river go by and watch the animals.
Because you're simple people and you just look at the water.
It's just so good. And
nice.
Yesterday, nice. Let's see. Yesterday we saw two bald eagles.
Wow. Freedom.
Flying together, and they were
You've
fishing.
Achieved maximum American.
They were fishing. They were catching fish out of the river. And then one of them flew away. And the other one went down to the river and then started like being a duck, and it just sat in the river like a duck. I'm just like,
it was just maybe it was a duck, and it was just cosplaying as an eagle, and got the other eagle to leave, and said, "I can't believe that worked." Now you've achieved maximum Canadian.
And then yesterday I went out to the river and I saw two beavers swimming by. That was fun. Yeah.